Chapter 15. They were aground on a patch of mud and sandy bottom that should have been marked with a stake, and the tide was still falling. The wind was blowing hard, and the water was muddy. Ahead was a medium-sized green key that looked set low in the water, and there was a scattering of very small keys to the left. To the left and the right, there were patches of bare bank that were beginning to show as the water receded. Thomas Hudson watched flocks of shorebirds wheeling and settling on the banks to feed. Antonio had the dinghy over, and he and Ada ran out a bow anchor and two light stern anchors. "Do you think we need another bow anchor?" Thomas Hudson asked Antonio.
"No, Tom, I don't think so.
If the wind rises, it can push us against the flood when it comes."
"I don't think it will, Tom, but it could."
"Let's get a small one out to windward and shift the big one further to leeward. Then we don't have anything to worry about."
"All right," Antonio said. "I'd rather do that than run aground again in a bad place."
"Yeah," Thomas Hudson said. "We went into all that before."
"It's still the right thing to anchor."
"I know it. I just asked you to put out another small one and shift the big one."
"Yes, Tom," Antonio said.
"Ada likes to lift anchors."
"Nobody likes to lift anchors."
"Ada," Antonio smiled and said.
"Maybe. Anyway, I agree with you."
"We always agree sooner or later."
"But we mustn't let it be when it's too late."
Thomas Hudson watched the maneuver and looked ahead at the green key that was showing dark now at the roots of the mangroves as the tide fell. They could be in the bight on the south side of that key, he thought. This wind is going to blow until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and they could try to break out and run either of the channels in daylight when the flood starts. Then they could run that big lake of a bay, where there is nothing to worry about all night. They have lights and a good channel to get out with at the far end. It all depends on the wind. Ever since they had grounded, he had felt, in a way, reprieved. When they had grounded, he had felt the heavy bump of the ship as though he were hit himself. He knew it was not rocky as she hit. He could feel that in his hands and through the soles of his feet. But the grounding had come to him as a personal wound. Then later had come the feeling of reprieve that a wound brings. He still had the feeling of the bad dream and that it had all happened before. But it had not happened in this way, and now, grounded, he had the temporary reprieve. He knew that it was only a reprieve, but he relaxed in it. Ada came up on the bridge and said,
"It's a good holding ground, Tom. We had them in there good with a trip line to the big one. When we raise the big one, we can't get out fast. We buoyed both our stern anchors with trip lines."
"I saw, thank you."
"Don't feel bad, Tom. The Sons of Bitches may be just behind that other key."
"I don't feel bad, I just feel delayed."
"It's not like smashing up a car or losing a ship. We're just aground waiting for a tide."
"I know."
"Both wheels are sound. She's just in mud up to her ass."
"I know, I put her there."
"She'll come off as easy as she went in."
"Sure she will."
"Tom, are you worried about anything?"
"What would I be worried about?"
"Nothing. I only worried if you were worried."
"The hell with worry," Thomas Hudson said. "You and Gil go down, see everybody eats well and is cheerful. Afterwards, we'll go in and check that key. That's all there is to do."
"Willie and I can go now. We don't have to eat."
"No, I'm going in later with Willie and Peters."
"No, me."
"No, Peters speaks German. Don't tell him he's going in. Just wake him up and see he drinks plenty of coffee."
"Why can't I go too?"
"The dinghy is too damn small." Gil left him the big glasses and went down with Ada. Thomas Hudson studied the key carefully with the big glasses and saw that the mangroves were too high for him to learn anything about what was inside. There were other trees mixed with the mangroves on the solid part of the key, and they brought the height up even more so that he could not possibly see if there was any mast showing in the horseshoe-shaped shelter on the far side. The big glasses hurt his eyes, and he put them in their case and hung the strap of the case on a hook and laid the glasses flat on the frag rack. He was happy to be alone again on the flying bridge, and he relaxed for the short time of his reprieve. He watched the shorebirds working on the flats, and he remembered what they had meant to him when he was a boy. He could not feel the same about them now, and he had no wish to kill them, ever. But he remembered the early days with his father in a blind on some sand spit with tin decoys out, and how they would come in as the tide lowered and bared the flats, and how he would whistle the flock in as they were circling, It was a sad whistle, and he made it now and turned one flock. But they veered off from the stranded ship and went far out to feed. He swept the horizon with the big glasses once, and there was no sign of any boat. Maybe they have made it out through the new channel and into the inside passage, he thought. It would be nice if someone else caught them. We can't catch them now without a fight. They will not surrender to a dinghy. He had been thinking so long in their heads that he was tired of it. I am really tired, finally, he thought. Well, I know what I have to do, so it is simple. Duty is a wonderful thing. I do not know what I would have done without duty since young Tom died. You could have painted, he told himself. Or you could have done something useful. Maybe, he thought. Duty is simpler. This is useful, he thought. Do not think against it. It helps to get it over with. That's all we are working for. Christ knows what there is beyond that. We've chased these characters quite well, and now take a 10-minute break and then proceed with your duty. The hell with quite well, he thought. We've chased them very well.
Don't you want to eat, Tom?
Ada called up.
I don't feel hungry, kid, Thomas Hudson said. I'll take the bottle of cold tea that's on the ice.
Ada handed it up, and Thomas Hudson took it and relaxed against the corner of the flying bridge. He drank from the bottle of cold tea and watched the biggest key that was ahead. The mangrove roots were showing plainly now, and the key looked as though it were on stilts. Then he saw a flight of flamingos coming from the left. They were flying low over the water, lovely to see in the sunlight. Their long necks were slanted down, and their incongruous legs were straight out, immobile while their pink and black wings beat, carrying them toward the mud bank that was ahead and to the right. Thomas Hudson watched them and marveled at their downswept black and white bills and the rose color they made in the sky, which made their strange individual structures unimportant, and still each one was an excitement to him. Then as they came up on the green key, he saw them all swing sharply to the right instead of crossing the key.
Ada, he called down.
Ada came up and said,
Yes, Tom.
Check out 3 Ninos with 6 clips apiece and put them in the boat with 12 frags and the middle-sized aid kit. Send Willie up here, please.
The flamingos had settled on the bank to the far right and were feeding busily. Thomas Hudson was watching them when Willie said,
Look at those goddamn flamingos.
They spooked, flying over the quay. I'm pretty sure that boat or another boat is inside there. Do you want to go in with me, Willie?
Of course.
Did you finish chow?
The condemned man ate a hearty lunch.
Help Ada, then.
Is Ada going with us?
I'm taking Peters because he speaks German.
Can we take Ada instead? I don't want to be with Peters in a fight.
Peters may be able to talk us out of a fight. Listen, Willie, I want prisoners, and I don't want their pilot to get killed.
You're making a lot of conditions, Tom, with them 8 or 9 maybe, and we 3. Who the hell knows we know they have the pilot anyway?
We know.
Let's not be so fucking noble.
I asked you if you wanted to come.
I'm coming,
Willie said.
Only that Peters.
Peters will fight. Send Antonio and Henry up, will you, please?
Do you think they are in there, Tom?
Antonio asked.
I'm pretty sure.
Can't I go in with you, Tom? Henry asked.
No, she will only take 3. If anything happens to us, try and nail her with the 50 if she tries to come out on the first of the tide. Afterwards, you'll find her in the long bay. She'll be damaged. She probably won't even be able to make it out. Get a prisoner if you can, and get into Cayo Frances and check in.
Couldn't I go instead of Peters? Henry asked.
No, Henry, I'm sorry, but he speaks German.
You have a good crew, Thomas Hudson said to Antonio. If everything goes well with us, I'll leave Willie and Peters on board with whatever there is and bring a prisoner back in the dinghy.
Our last prisoner didn't last very long.
I'll try and bring a good, strong, healthy one. Go on down and see everything is secured. I want to watch the flamingos for a little while.
He stood on the flying bridge and watched the flamingos. It is not just their color, he thought. It's not just the black on that rose pink. It is their size and that they are ugly in detail and yet perversely beautiful. They must be a very old bird from the earliest times. He did not watch them through the glasses because he did not want details now. He wanted the roseate mass on the gray-brown flat. 2 other flocks had come in now and the banks were colored in a way that he would not have dared to paint. Or I would have dared to paint, and would have painted, he thought. It is nice to see flamingos before you make this trip. I better not give them time to worry or think too much. He climbed down from the bridge and said, Gil, get up there and keep your glasses on the key. Henry, if you hear a lot of noise and then the turtle boat should come out from behind the key, shoot her fucking bow off. Everybody get up and glass where the survivors are and you can hunt them tomorrow. Plug the dinghy where she is shot up and use her. The turtle boat has a skiff and you can plug her up and use her too if we don't damage her too badly. Antonio said, Do you have any other orders? Just keep your bowels open and try to lead clean lives. We'll be back in a little while. Come on, you two gentlemen bastards, let's go.
Grandmother always claimed I wasn't a bastard, Peter said. She said I was the nicest looking, most legitimate little baby in the county.
Mother claimed I wasn't a bastard, too,
Willie said.
Where do you want us, Tom?
She trims best with you in the bow, but I'll take the bow if you like.
Get in and steer her, Willie said. You got a really good ship now.
I've got my finger on my number, Thomas Hudson said. I'm working up. Come aboard, Mr. Peters.
Happy to be aboard, Admiral, Peters
said. Good hunting, Henry said.
Drop dead, Willie called.
The motor caught and they were off toward the silhouette of the key that was lower in the water now because of their lack of altitude. I'm going alongside and will board her without hailing. The two men nodded, one amidships and one in the bow. Get your junk hung. I don't give a shit if it shows, Thomas Hudson said.
I don't know where I'd hide it, Peters said. I feel like one of Grandma's mules now.
Then be a mule. It's a fucking good animal.
Tom, do I have to remember all that shit about the pilot?
Remember it, but use your head.
Well, said Peters, we haven't any fucking troubles anymore.
We better all pipe down, Thomas Hudson said. We'll all three board at the same time, and if they're below, you ask them in Kraut to come out with their hands up. We have to stop talking because they can hear voices a long way above the noise of an outboard.
What do we do if they don't come out?
Willie throws in a grenade.
What do we do if they're on deck?
Sweep the deck according to our sectors, me the stern, Peters amidships, you the bow.
Then do I throw in a grenade?
Sure. We ought to get wounded that we can save, that's why I brought the kit.
I thought that was for us.
Us too. Now let's pipe down. Do you have it clear?
Clearer than shit,
Willie said.
Has there been an issue of asshole corks?
Peters asked. They dropped it from the plane this morning. Didn't you get yours?
No, but Grandma always said I had the slowest digestion of any baby in the whole of the South. They got one of my diapers in the Smithsonian Institute of the Confederacy.
Cut out this shit,
Willie said, leaning back in order not to talk loudly.
Are we doing all this in daylight, Tom?
Now.
I'll be a sad son of a bitch, said Willie. I have fallen among thieves and bastards.
Shut up, Willie, and let's see you fight. Willie nodded his head and looked ahead with his good eye toward the green mangrove key which lay tiptoed on its brown-red roots. He only said one more thing before they rounded the point.
They got good oysters on those roots.
Thomas Hudson nodded. Chapter 16. They saw the turtle boat when they rounded the point of the key and passed through the channel which separated it from another small key. She was lying with her bow close into shore, and there were vines hanging from her mast, and her deck was covered with new-cut mangrove branches. Willie leaned back, and with his voice almost against Peter's ear, said in a low voice,
Her skiff is missing. Pass the word.
Peters leaned his blotched, freckled face back and said,
Her skiff's missing, Tom. There must be some ashore.
We'll board her and sink her, Thomas Hudson said. Same plan. Pass the word. Peters bent forward and spoke into Willie's ear, and Willie's head started to shake. Then he held up his hand with the familiar zero. Zero as an asshole, Thomas Hudson thought. They came up on her as fast as the little coffee mill of an engine would take them, and Thomas Hudson put her smartly alongside without bumping. Willie lifted the grapple over the gunwale of the turtle boat and pulled it fast, and the three of them were on the deck almost at the same time. Underneath their feet there were mangrove branches with their dead, fresh smell, and Thomas Hudson saw the vine-draped mast as though now it were a dream again. He saw the hatch open, and a forward hatch open and covered with branches. There was no one on deck. Thomas Hudson waved Willie forward past this hatch and covered the other one with his submachine gun. He checked that the safety lever was on full automatic. Under his bare feet, he could feel the hard roundness of the branches, the slipperiness of the leaves, and the heat of the wooden deck. "Tell them to come out with their hands up," he said quietly to Peters. Peters spoke in rough, throaty German. Nobody answered, and nothing happened. Thomas Hudson thought Grandma's boy has a good delivery, and said, "Tell them again we give them 10 seconds to come out. We will treat them as prisoners of war, then count 10. Peters spoke so it sounded like the voice of all German doom. His voice holds up magnificently, Thomas Hudson thought, and turned his head fast to see if the skiff were in sight. He could only see the brown roots and the green of the mangroves. "Count 10 and put one in," he said. "Watch that fucking forward hatch, Willie."
"It's got those fucking branches covering it."
"Push one in with your hands when Peters goes. Don't throw it." Peters reached 10, and standing there, tall, loose-jointed like a pitcher on the mound, holding his submachine gun under his left arm, he pulled the pin of the grenade with his teeth, held it spurting smoke a moment as though he were warming it, and tossed it with the underhand motion of a Carl Mays into the darkness of the hatch. As Thomas Hudson watched him, he thought, "He's a great actor, and he doesn't think there's anything down there." Thomas Hudson hit the deck, covering the mouth of the hatch with his Thompson. Peter's grenade exploded with a flashing crack and a roar, and Thomas Hudson saw Willie opening the brush to drop a grenade in the forward hatch. Then, to the right of the mast, where the vines hung, he saw the muzzle of a gun come up from between the branches on the same hatch where Willie was working. He fired at it, but it fired 5 quick flashes, clattering like a child's rattle. Then Willie's grenade went with a big flash, and Thomas Hudson looked and saw Willie in the scuppers pull the pin on another grenade to throw in. Peters was on his side with his head on the gunwale. Blood was running from his head into the scuppers. Willie threw, and the grenade had a different sound because it rolled further into the boat before it burst.
"You think there are any more of the cocksuckers?" Willie called.
"I'll put one more in from here," Thomas Hudson said. He ducked and ran to get out of any fire from the big hatch and pulled the pin on another grenade, gray, heavy, solid, and notched in the grip of his hand, and crossing forward of the hatch, he rolled it down into the stern. There was the crack, boom, and smoke where pieces of the deck came up. Willie was looking at Peters, and Tom came over and looked at him, too. He did not look very different than usual.
"Well, we've lost our interpreter," Willie said.
His good eye was twitching, but his voice was the same. "She's settling fast," Thomas Hudson said.
"She was aground already, but she's going over on her beam ends now."
"We've got a lot of uncompleted business, Willie."
"And we traded even, 1 for 1. But we sunk the damn boat."
"You better get the hell back to the ship and get back here with Otter and Henry. Tell Antonio to bring her abreast to the point as soon as he gets the tide."
"I have to check below first."
"I'll check."
"No," Willie said. "That's my trade."
"How do you feel, kid?"
"Fine. Only sorry to hear of the loss of Mr. Peters. I'll get a rag or something to put over his face. We ought to straighten him out with his head uphill now she's careening like this."
"How's the crowd in the bow?"
"He's a mess."
This ends Disc 11.
Chapter 17. Willie was gone now to bring Ada and Henry. Thomas Hudson lay behind the parapet the high gunwale of the turtle boat made. His feet were against the hatch, and he was watching for the skiff. Peters lay feet downward on the other side of the hatch, and his face was covered by a German Navy fatigue shirt. "I never realized he was so tall," Thomas Hudson thought. He and Willie had both searched the turtle boat, and it was a mess. There had only been one German on board. He was the one who had shot Peters, and he had evidently taken him for the officer. There was one other Schmeisser machine pistol aboard, and close to 2,000 rounds of ammunition in a metal case, which had been opened with pliers or a can opener. Presumably, the men who had gone ashore had been armed because there were no weapons on board. The skiff was at least a 16-foot heavy turtler from the chalks and the marks that she had left on the deck. They still had a quantity of food. It was mostly dried fish and hard roasted pork. It was the wounded man who had been left on board who had shot Peters. He had a bad thigh wound that was nearly healed, and another nearly healed wound in the fleshy part of his left shoulder. They had good charts of the coast and of the West Indies, and there was one carton of Camels without stamps and marked ship supplies. They had no coffee nor tea nor any liquors of any sort. The problem now was what they would do. Where were they? They must have seen or heard the small fight on the turtle boat, and they might return to pick up their stores. They would have seen one man leave by himself in the dinghy with the outboard, and from the shots and the explosion of the frags, there could easily be three men dead or incapacitated aboard. They would come back for stores or anything else that might be hidden, and then break for the mainland in the dark. They could shove the skiff off anything that she might ground on. The skiff must be a sturdy craft. Thomas Hudson had no radio operator, and it was therefore impossible to give a description of the skiff, and nobody would be looking for her. Then, if they wanted to, and had the will to try it, they could try to assault the ship at night. That seemed extremely unlikely. Thomas Hudson thought it out as carefully as he could. Finally, he decided, I believe that they will go inside the mangroves and haul the skiff in and hide it. If we go in after them, they can ambush us easily. Then they will run for the open inside bay and push on and try and pass Cayo Frances at night. That is easy. They may pick up supplies or raid for them, and they will keep on pushing to the westward and try to make one of the German outfits around Havana where they will hide them and pick them up. They can easily get a better boat. They can jump one or steal one. I have to report at Cayo Frances and deliver Peters and get my orders. The trouble won't come until Havana. There's a lieutenant commanding at Cayo Frances, and we won't have any trouble there, and they can keep Peters. I have enough ice to handle him to there, and I gas there and get ice at Caibarien. We are going to get these characters, for better or for worse. But I am not going to put Willie and Ada and Henry into one of those burp gun massacres in the mangroves for fuck-all nothing. There are eight of them, anyway, from the looks of everything on board. I had a chance to catch them today with their pants down, and I blew it because they were too smart or too lucky, and they are always efficient. We've lost one man, and he is our radio operator, but we have cut them down to a skiff now. If I see the skiff, we will destroy it and blockade the island and hunt them down on it, but I'm not going to stick our necks into any of those 8-against-3 traps. If it is my ass afterwards, it is my ass. It's going to be my ass anyway, now that I've lost Peters. If I lost any irregulars, nobody would give a damn, except me and the ship. I wish they would get back, he thought. I don't want those bastards coming out to see what gives aboard this vessel and have the Battle of No Name Key by myself. I wonder what they are doing in there, anyway. Maybe they went for oysters. Willie mentioned the oysters. Maybe they just didn't want to be on this turtle boat in daylight if a plane came over and spotted her. But they must know the hours those planes work on by now. Hell, I wish they would come out and get it over with. I've got good cover and they'd have to get in range before they try to come aboard. Why do you suppose that wounded man didn't open up on us when we came over the side? He must have heard the outboard, maybe he was asleep. The outboard makes very little noise, anyway. There are too many whys in this business, he thought, and I'm not at all sure I have it figured out properly. Maybe I should not have jumped the boat, but I think I had to do that. We sunk the boat and lost Peters and killed one man. That is not very brilliant, but it still adds up. He heard the hum of the outboard and turned his head. He saw her coming around the point, but he could only see one man in her. It was Ada in the stern. But he noticed she was loaded deep, and he realized that Willie and Henry must be lying flat. Willie's really smart, he thought. Now the people on the quay don't know but that there may be only one man in the dinghy, and they will see it as a different man from the one that took her away. I don't know whether that is smart or not, but Willie must have figured it. The dinghy came up in the lee of the turtle boat, and Thomas Hudson saw Ada's great chest, his long arms, and his brown face that was serious now, and he could see the nervous twitching of his legs. Henry and Willie lay flat with their heads on their arms. When the dinghy came into the lee of the turtle boat that was careened away from the quay, and Ada held the rail, Willie turned on his side and said,
"Get aboard, Henry, and crawl up there with Tom. Ada will hand you your junk. You've got Peter's junk, too."
Henry climbed cautiously up the steep deck on his belly. He took one look at Peters as he crawled by him.
"Hi, Tom," he said.
Thomas Hudson put his hand on Henry's arm and said softly, "Get up in the bow and keep absolutely flat. Don't let anything show over the gunwale."
"Yes, Tom," the big man said, and began inching down to crawl up to the bow.
He had to crawl over Peters' legs, and he picked up his submachine gun and clips and stuck the clips in his belt. He felt in Peter's pockets for frags and hung them on his belt.
He patted Peters on the legs, and holding the two submachine guns by the muzzles, he crawled up to his post in the bow. Thomas Hudson saw him look down into the blasted forward hatch as he crawled up the steep deck over the broken mangroves. His face gave no sign of what he saw there. When he was under the lee of the gunwale, he put the two submachine guns by his right hand and then tested the functioning of Peter's gun and put in a fresh clip. He laid the other clips along the gunwale and unhooked the grenades from his belt and laid them out within reach. When he saw him in position and looking out at the greenness of the quay, Thomas Hudson turned his head and spoke to Willie, who was lying in the bottom of the dinghy with his good and his bad eye shut against the sun. He was wearing a faded khaki shirt with sleeves and ragged shorts, and he had a pair of sneakers on. Otto was sitting in the stern, and Thomas Hudson noticed his thatch of black hair and the way his big hands gripped the gunwale. His legs were still jumping, but Thomas Hudson had known for a long time how nervous he always was before action, and how beautiful he was once things started. "Willie," Thomas Hudson said, "you have anything figured?" Willie opened his good eye and kept his bad eye closed against the sun.
"I ask permission to go in on the far side of the quay and see what the hell gives. We can't let them get out of here."
"I'll go in with you."
"No, Tommy, I know this shit, and it's my trade."
"I don't want you to go in alone."
"That's the only way on this. You trust me, Tommy. Otto will come back here and back up your play if I flush them. He can come in and pick me up on the beach if there isn't any trouble."
He had both eyes open, and he was looking hard at Thomas Hudson the way a man looks who is trying to sell an appliance to someone who should really have it if they can afford it. "I'd rather go in with you."
"Too fucking much noise, Tom. I tell you truly, I know this shit good. I'm a fucking expert. You'll never find anybody like me."
"Okay, go in," Thomas Hudson said. "But bust up their skiff."
"What the hell you think I'm going to do? Go in there and jerk off?"
"If you're going in, you better get in."
"Tom, now you've got two traps set. The ship and here. Ara makes you mobile. You have one expendable, medically discharged Marine to lose. What's holding you up?"
"You talking so much," Thomas Hudson said. "Get the hell in and shit bless you."
"Drop dead,"
Willie told him. "You sound in good shape," Thomas Hudson said, and explained rapidly in Spanish to Otto what they were going to do.
"Don't bother," Willie said. "I can talk to him lying down."
Otto said,
"I'll be right back, Tom."
Thomas Hudson watched him yank the motor alive and watched the dinghy move out with Otto's broad back and black head in the stern and Willie lying in the bottom. He had turned around so that his head was close to Otto's feet and he could talk to him. The good, brave, worthless son of a bitch, Thomas Hudson thought. Old Willie. He made up my mind for me when I was starting to put things off. I would rather have a good Marine, even a ruined Marine, than anything in the world when there are chips down. And we have chips down now. Good luck, Mr. Willie, he thought. And don't drop dead. "How are you, Henry?" he asked softly.
"Fine, Tom. It was very gallant of Willie to go in, don't you think?"
"He never even heard of the word," Thomas Hudson said. "He just conceived it to be his duty."
"I'm sorry we haven't been friends."
"Everybody is friends when things are bad enough."
"I'm going to be friends from now on."
"We're all going to do a lot of things from now on," Thomas Hudson said. "I wish from now on would start." Chapter 18. They were lying on the hot deck watching the line of the quay. The sun was strong on their backs, but the wind cooled them. Their backs were nearly as brown as the Sea Indian women they had seen this morning on the outer quay. That seemed as long ago as all his life, Thomas Hudson thought. That and the open sea and the long breaking reefs and the dark, depthless tropic sea beyond were as far away as all of his life was now. "We could have just gone up the open sea with this breeze and made Cayo Frances, and Peters would have answered their blinker, and we all would have had cold beer tonight." "Don't think about it, boy," he thought. "This is what you had to do." "Henry," he said, "how are you doing?"
"Splendidly, Tom," Henry said very softly. "A frag couldn't blow up from getting too hot in the sun, could it?"
"I've never seen it, but it can increase their potency."
"I hope Ara's got some water," Henry said.
Don't you remember them putting it in?
No, Tom, I was looking after my own equipment, and I didn't notice.
Then against the wind they heard the noise of the outboard on the dinghy. Thomas Hudson turned his head carefully and saw her round the point. The dinghy was riding high and Otto was in the stern. He could see the width of his shoulders and his black head at this distance. Thomas Hudson turned his head again to watch the quay, and he saw a night heron rise from the trees in the center and fly away. Then he saw two wood ibis rise and wheel and fly off with quick flapping, then coasting, then quick flapping wing beats downwind toward the little quay. Henry had watched them too, and he said,
"Willie must be getting pretty well in."
"Yes," Thomas Hudson said. "They came off the high ridge in the center of the quay."
"Then nobody else was there."
"Not if it was Willie who scared them."
"That's about where Willie would be by now if he didn't have too bad going.
Keep down low now when Otta comes." Otta brought the dinghy along the careened lee of the turtle boat and put the grapnel aboard against the gunwale. He climbed carefully aboard with the ease of a bear. He had a water bottle and a bottle of tea in an old gin bottle, each tied to a piece of heavy fishing line that suspended them over his neck. He crawled up to lie beside Thomas Hudson.
"What about some of the damn water?"
Henry asked. Otta laid his stuff down beside Thomas Hudson's, untied the water bottle from the fish line, and crawled carefully along the slanted deck above the two hatches to where Henry was stationed.
"Drink it," he said. "Don't try to bathe with it."
He slapped Henry on the back and crawled back to lie beside Thomas Hudson.
"Tom," he said, speaking very low, "we saw nothing. I landed Willie on the far side, almost directly opposite us, and went out to the ship. There I went aboard on the lee side away from the quay. I explained everything to Antonio, and he understood well. Then I filled the outboard with gas and filled the reserve can and brought out the iced tea and the water."
"Good," said Thomas Hudson. He dropped down the deck a little way and took a long pull at the bottle of iced tea. "Thank you very much for the tea."
"It was Antonio who thought of it. We forgot certain things in our hurry at the start."
"Move down toward the stern so you can cover it."
"Yes, Tom," Otta said.
They lay there in the sun and the wind, and each one watched the quay. Occasionally a bird or a pair of birds would fly up, and they knew these birds had been frightened either by Willie or by the others.
"The birds must make Willie angry," Otta said. "He didn't think about that when he went in."
"It might just as well be sending up balloons," Thomas Hudson answered. He was thinking, and he turned to look over his shoulder. He did not like any of it now. There were too many birds getting up from the quay. And what reason now had they to believe that the others were in there now? Why would they have gone in there in the first place? Lying on the deck, he had a hollow feeling in his chest that both he and Willie had been deceived. Maybe they haven't sucked us in. But it does not look good with so many birds getting up, he thought. Another pair of wood ibis rose not far from the shore, and Thomas Hudson turned to Henry and said, "Get down on the forward hatch, Henry, please, and keep watch inland."
"It's awfully messy in there."
"I know."
"All right, Tom.
Leave your frags and clips. Just take a frag in your pocket and the Nino." Henry eased himself down into the hatch and looked out toward the inside keys that masked the channel. His expression had not changed, but he was tight-lipped, keeping it in order. "I'm sorry about it, Henry," Thomas Hudson said to him. "It's just the way it has to be for a while."
"I don't mind it," Henry said.
Then the studied severity of his face cracked, and he smiled his wonderful good smile.
"It's that it isn't exactly the way I would plan to spend a summer."
"Me either, but things don't look so open and shut right now." A bittern came out from the mangroves, and Thomas Hudson heard it squawk and watched its nervous swooping flight downwind. Then he settled down to trace Willie's progress along the mangroves by the rising and the flight of the birds. When the birds stopped rising, he was sure he was headed back. Then, after a time, they were being put up again, and he knew Willie was working out the windward curve of the quay. After 3/4 of an hour, he saw a great white heron rise in panic and start its slow, heavy wing beats to windward, and he said to Otta, "He'll be out now. Better go down to the point and pick him up."
"I see him," Otta said in a moment. "He just waved. He's lying down just in from the beach.
Go get him and bring him back lying down. Otta slid back down to the dinghy with his weapon and with a couple of frags in his pockets. He got into the stern of the dinghy and cast her off.
Toss me that tea bottle, will you, Tom?
Otta caught it using both hands for surety instead of the one-hand catch he would usually have made. He enjoyed catching frags one-handed and the hardest way possible, just as he enjoyed crimping detonator caps with his teeth. But this tea was for Willie, and he appreciated what Willie had been through, even though there were no results, and he placed the bottle carefully under the stern and hoped it was still cool.
What do you think, Tom? Henry asked. We're fucked for the moment.
In a little while, the dinghy was alongside, and Willie was lying in the bottom with the bottle of tea in both hands. His hands and face were scratched and bloody, although he had washed them with seawater, and one sleeve was torn off his shirt. His face was bulging with mosquito bites, and there were lumps from mosquito bites wherever his flesh was bare.
"There's not a goddamn thing, Tom," he said. "They never were on that key. You and I weren't too damn smart."
"No."
"What do you think?"
"They went inside after they grounded. Whether for keeps or to make a recon of the channels, I don't know."
"Do you think they saw us board?"
"They could have seen everything or nothing. They're pretty low in the water to see."
"They ought to have heard it downwind."
"They should have."
"So now?"
"You get out to the ship and send Otta back for Henry and me. They might still be back."
"What about Peters? We can't take him."
"Take him now."
"Tommy, you're parapeted up on the wrong side,"
Willie said.
"We've both been wrong, and I'm not offering any advice."
"I know it. I'm going down in the after hatch as soon as Otta loads Peters."
"He better load him by himself," Willie said. "They could see silhouettes, but they couldn't make out an object flat on the deck without glasses."
Thomas Hudson explained to Otta, and Otta climbed up and handled Peters quite easily and impersonally, but he knotted the cloth behind his head. He was neither tender nor rough, and all he said as he lifted him and slid him headfirst into the dinghy was,
"He is very rigid." "That's why they call him Stiffs,"
Willie said.
"Didn't you ever hear?"
"Yes," Otta said. "We call them fiambres, which means cold meats, as in a restaurant when you can have fish or cold meats. But I was thinking of Peters. He was always so limber."
"I'll get him right back, Tom. Do you need anything?"
"Luck," Thomas Hudson said. "Thank you for the recon, Willie."
"Just the usual shit,"
Willie said. "Have Gil put merthiolate on the scratches."
"Fuck the scratches," Willie said. "I'm going to run as a jungle man."
Thomas Hudson and Henry were looking out from the two hatches toward the broken and indented line of quays that lay between them and the long bay that formed the inland channel. They spoke in a normal tone of voice since they knew the others could not be closer than those small green islands. "You watch," Thomas Hudson said. "I'm going to throw that ammunition of theirs overboard and have another look around below." Below, he found several things he had not noticed before, and he lifted the case of ammunition out onto the deck and pushed it over the side. "I suppose I should have scattered all the cartons," he thought, "but the hell with it." He brought up the Schmeisser pistol and found it was not functioning. He laid it down with his own stuff. "I'll let Otta break it down," he thought. "At least we know why they did not take it with them. Do you suppose they left that wounded man behind just as a reception committee and pulled out? Or do you suppose they made him comfortable and went off for a recon? How much do you think they saw and how much do they know?"
"Don't you think we might have kept that ammo for evidence?"
Henry asked.
"We're way past the evidence stage now. But it's always good to have it. You know how stuffy they are, and they'll probably just evaluate the whole thing as doubtful. Maybe O and I won't even give it a doubtful. Do you remember the last one, Tom?"
"Yes, I remember."
"She went all the way up the mouth of the Mississippi, and she's still doubtful."
"That's correct."
"I think we might have kept the ammo."
"Henry," Thomas Hudson said, "please take it easy. The deads from the massacre are on the quay. We have Schmeisser bullets from them and from the dead kraut. We have another dead kraut buried with the location in the log. We have this turtle boat sunk and a dead kraut in her bows. We have two Schmeisser pistols. One is non-functioning and the other is smashed by the frag.
A hurricane will come along and blow everything away and they will say the whole thing is doubtful."
"All right," said Thomas Hudson. "Let's concede the whole thing is doubtful. And Peters?
One of us probably shot him.
Sure. We'll have to go through all that. They heard the outboard and then saw Ada round the point. That dinghy rides as high in the bow as a canoe, Thomas Hudson thought. Get your junk together, Henry, he said. We're going back to the ship.
I'm glad to stay aboard this thing if you want me to.
No, I want you on the ship. After Ada came alongside, Thomas Hudson changed his mind. Stay here, Henry, a little while, and I'll send Ada for you. If they come out, get a frag into the skiff if they come alongside. Take this back hatch where you have lots of room. Use your head.
Yes, Tom, thank you for letting me stay.
I'd stay and send you in, but I have to talk things over with Antonio.
I understand. Shouldn't I fire on them when they're alongside before I throw the frag?
If you want, but keep your head down and then throw the frag in from the other hatch and hold it all you can. He was lying in the lee scuppers, passing his things to Ada. Then he lowered himself over the side. Is there too much water for you down there? He asked Henry.
No, Tom. It's quite all right.
Don't get claustrophobia and keep a good lookout. If they come in, let them get right alongside before you make your play.
Of course, Tom.
Think of it as a duck blind.
I don't have to, Tom.
Thomas Hudson was lying flat on the planking of the dinghy now. Ada will be back as soon as you ought to come in.
Don't worry, Tom. I can stay here all night if you like, but I'd like Ada to bring out something to eat, and a little rum, perhaps, and some more water.
He'll be back and pick you up, and we'll have a little rum on board. Ada pulled the cord on the motor, and they headed for the ship. Thomas Hudson felt the frags along his legs and the weight of the Nino across his chest. He put his arms around it and cuddled it, and Ada laughed and leaned down and said,
This is a bad life for good children.